Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is May 26, 1978, and this is my audio letter number 34. The time has now come for me to take pause and to take stock of the desperate situation facing us. I have worked as hard and as faithfully as I know how to do for 5 years, and I believe I should give you my honest evaluation of the success or failure of what I have been trying to do. I am not making a career of this. Either the plans of our secret rulers for war and disaster will be stopped, or they will stop us. My three special topics for today are topic number one, the Battle of Midway repeated in space. Topic number two, earthquakes, weather control, and hunger in America. And topic number three, the public confession of Dr. Beter. Topic number one. 8 months ago tomorrow, on September 27, 1977, the United States lost the most decisive battle of the 20th century, the Battle of the Harvest Moon. Not since the early days of World War II has there been anything remotely like it in significance. Ever since the sleepy Sunday morning of December 7, 1941, the words Pearl Harbor have meant far more than the geographical location of the headquarters of the Pacific Fleet of the United States Navy. From that day onward, Pearl Harbor has been a synonym for surprise attack of the most devastating variety. To every American who heard the chilling, unbelievable news bulletins on the radio that day, the Pearl Harbor attack still remains as a searing memory. For us, it was the beginning of a nightmare called World War II. The emotional impact of the Pearl Harbor attack still lingers on, but the full meaning of that attack was lost on most of us then, and is even less widely understood today. For it was not until 6 months later that the true significance of the Pearl Harbor attack was revealed in the decisive Battle of Midway. And by then, we Americans were too preoccupied with fighting the war to stop and notice the broader meaning of particular battles. In audio letter 14, nearly 2 years ago, I referred to the fact that just prior to the Pearl Harbor attack, President Franklin D. Roosevelt had taken steps to arrange for our three aircraft carriers based there to be absent when the Japanese attacked. And in audio book talking tape number 7B, which I recorded over 2 years ago with my friend Colonel Curtis B. Dowell, Colonel Dowell tells the whole story of the treason of America's leaders in connection with the Pearl Harbor attack. There's no time to review all of that again here. It's enough to say that Pearl Harbor was held out to the Japanese as an enticing target for attack, as a ruse to get America into the war. By virtue of the Tripartite Act between Japan, Germany, and Italy, this automatically involved America in the European war as well. As a result, our secret rulers emerged from World War II in control of the formerly British oil concessions in Saudi Arabia. But returning to the Pacific, the sequence of events from the Pearl Harbor attack in December 1941 to the Battle of Midway 6 months later had a profound impact on American military strategy for decades to come. In the realm of naval strategy, the rise to dominance of the aircraft carrier was confirmed during that period in the Pacific over 35 years ago. And today, the aircraft carrier is still a dominant factor in most American naval thinking. But far beyond that, those first 6 months of the Pacific War became the primitive model for an entire grand strategy for world domination that was set in motion 2 decades later in 1961. Only this time, the secret strategy backfired. In June 1942, the Battle of Midway, the turning point of the Pacific War, was won by the United States. But in September 1977, the Battle of the Harvest Moon, another turning point, was lost by the United States. As World War II began, most Americans still thought of battleships as typifying naval power. We had heard about aircraft carriers, submarines, and other kinds of ships, but it was the battleship with its awesome big guns, able to pound landing beaches or other ships 20 miles away, that automatically came to mind. If we had been asked, most Americans probably would have answered that the battleship was the key to naval strength. But we, the public, were behind the times. A revolution was taking place in the technology of naval weaponry, and top strategists knew that the days of the battleship were already numbered, thanks to the rapid emergence of effective aircraft carriers. In 1941, this turn of events was still so new that even within naval ranks it was a matter of heated debate. But at the highest levels of strategic thinking, it was understood in Japan as well as in the United States. When Admiral Yamamoto, the Japanese naval chief, launched a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, he used a naval force built around 6 aircraft carriers. Like all military commanders, Yamamoto knew that surprise would be the most powerful of all weapons, and every precaution was taken to ensure that it would be achieved. Long before battleships or cruisers would have been close enough to start shelling Pearl Harbor, Yamamoto's aircraft carriers began launching dive bombers, torpedo planes, and fighters into the first rays of dawn. And at 7:55 a.m. Honolulu time, wave after wave of Japanese aircraft swept in to attack Pearl Harbor. Not a single American fighter rose to meet the first waves of Japanese attackers, because the surprise was complete. Battleships, cruisers, and destroyers were caught where they lay peacefully at anchor, bottled up in the harbor. And American aircraft, grouped together on the airfield as a precaution against sabotage, were turned into gigantic, towering bonfires, even as American pilots tried in vain to start their planes and take off. Yes, tactical surprise had been achieved at Pearl Harbor by Yamamoto. But it was Yamamoto who was surprised in the strategic sense, because just as he had used aircraft carriers for the attack, his principal targets at Pearl Harbor had been our 3 aircraft carriers based there. Falsified intelligence reports had been used to convince Yamamoto that these prize targets were there. But when Japanese aircraft swarmed over Pearl Harbor that December morning, all 3 carriers were missing. As a result, the decisive blow that Yamamoto had tried to deliver to the United States Pacific Fleet had not been achieved. But incredible carnage and terror had taken place. Just the right medicine our secret rulers needed to cure American reluctance to go to war. Just 5 months later, the seriousness of the failure of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor began to make itself felt. A large Japanese task force was preparing to invade some islands in the Solomons, using powerful battleships and cruisers to cover the invasion. But the United States Navy intervened, using aircraft carriers to good advantage. The resulting Battle of the Coral Sea ruined the Japanese attack plan by turning the entire engagement into a battle between aircraft carriers. The Japanese were never able to make use of their battleships, cruisers, and landing craft, and had to withdraw. But it was the following month, June 1942, that the decisive Battle of Midway sealed Japan's fate for the rest of the war. Admiral Yamamoto launched an attack against Midway Island, an important American air and naval toehold in the South Pacific. Yamamoto's force included not only 4 aircraft carriers, but a seemingly overwhelming force of battleships, together with cruisers, destroyers, and submarines. But once again, the United States Navy turned the whole thing into a battle between aircraft carriers. Under the command of Admiral Chester Nimitz, American forces built around the three carriers that had been deliberately saved from the Pearl Harbor surprise attacked the Japanese from an unexpected direction. In a single day, June 4, 1942, all four of the attacking Japanese carriers were sunk. Now the vast fleet of Japanese battleships and other vessels were robbed of their air umbrella and became useless. They couldn't get close enough to Midway to attack and had to turn away. Without their carriers, they were defeated, regardless of all their seeming power otherwise. The Battle of Midway was the turning point of the Pacific War. It came only 6 months after Pearl Harbor, and the war continued with great loss of life on both sides for more than 3 years afterward. But with the Battle of Midway, the ultimate outcome of the war between Japan and the United States became only a matter of time. Because the loss of the four carriers sunk in the Battle of Midway broke the back of Japanese naval superiority in the Pacific. From then on, American productive capacity enabled the United States to gradually pull ahead and outstrip all Japanese capabilities, and Japan was doomed. The events from Pearl Harbor to Midway over a generation ago provided lessons that our arrogant secret rulers thought they could apply on a far bigger scale once again. By means of Pearl Harbor, they had lured an intended victim, Japan, into an attack that united the American people into support for war. Meanwhile, they had held back in reserve the essential weapons of retaliation, which were to enable the victim to be defeated, namely aircraft carriers. At the time, carriers were still so new as a real naval force that their true significance was lost on the public at large. But by banking everything on this new decisive technology of war, they had succeeded in destroying Japan as the planned outcome of the war. 20 years later, in 1961, a replay of the same basic strategy was set in motion by our secret rulers. This was the elaborate two-pronged strategy for world domination, about which I have given many details beginning last September in Audio Letter 26 and in other audio letters since then. The intended victim this time was to be Soviet Russia, the only military force on earth rivaling that of the Rockefeller Empire. Once again, the intention was to lure the victim, Russia, into a Pearl Harbor-type attack under carefully controlled conditions. As before, the terror and carnage would be inhuman, with many millions of lives being snuffed out this time, since the attack would be nuclear. But as before, our secret rulers intended to keep in reserve a decisive ace in the hole in terms of new weapons technology with which to destroy the intended victim when the time came. In the Pacific War over 35 years ago, it was the new aircraft carrier whose umbrella determined the usefulness of almost all other weapons. Today, it is space weaponry that plays the same role. And the ace in the hole our secret rulers had kept aside was the secret American moon base in Copernicus Crater. Armed with beam weapons, the Copernicus base was to be an invulnerable location from which any populated spot on Earth could be put to the torch instantly and at will. But last September, 1977, the whole diabolical plan backfired, as I told you in detail that month in Audio Letter 26. First, on September 20, 1977, the first operational Russian killer satellite, Cosmos 929, manned and armed with charged particle beam weapons, blasted an American spy satellite into a giant fireball over the Petrozavodsk Observatory, located in northern Russia. It was like the Battle of the Coral Sea in May 1942, for suddenly the rules of battle were undergoing a dramatic change. Only this time it was happening in reverse. This time the tables were being turned against us, not by us. Then, only a week later, the space age equivalent of the Battle of Midway took place, out of the public eye, and without any public suspicion of what was taking place. Suddenly, without explanation, the Soviet Union expelled European community fishing vessels from its northern waters, where its mammoth northern fleet is based. Then, on September 27, 1977, the Battle of the Harvest Moon ended in a stunning upset. The Soviet Union had knocked out the secret American weapons base in Copernicus Crater. It was a turning point battle, no less than the Battle of Midway and World War II. Since that time, as I have chronicled for you in my tapes month to month, Soviet Russia has turned the tables against the United States militarily just as surely and just as decisively as did the United States against Japan in World War II. All-out war between Russia and America has not yet broken out, but the ultimate outcome appears to have been decided already by the turning point secret space battle of 8 months ago. In the same way, the bulk of the fighting between Japan and the United States in World War II took place after the Battle of Midway. But the turning point at Midway set the course for the remainder of the war that Japan could never reverse. Topic number two. In the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in 1918, centralized control of food production and distribution, food rationing, purges, and other factors led to the horrendous Russian famine of 1919 to 1921. The vicious new masters of Russia, the Bolsheviks, who are now being expelled from Russia, used hunger as a deliberate tool for political control. The awesome and tragic effects of hunger on people were described as a lesson to all by the late P.A. Sorokin, S-O-R-O-K-I-N, the great Russian sociologist who fled Bolshevik Russia and founded the Department of Sociology at Harvard University. To all who are wise enough to care about the lessons of the Russian experience in this area, I strongly recommend Sorokin's book titled Hunger as a Factor in Human Affairs. It's available for $12.50 from the University of Florida Press, 15 Northwest Street, Gainesville, Florida, zip 32603. In my very first tape, audio book number one, I mentioned the planned role of shortages and even starvation in America as factors in the coming depression and war. Many things have gone awry in our secret rulers' timetables since then, but the prospects for hunger in America have, if anything, increased. In recent tapes, I've mentioned the weather modification role which can be played by Russian cosmospheres. Their charged particle beam weapons, when fired in a defocused mode, produce not only air blasts like those that were first heard along our east coast last December, but also electrical charges in the upper atmosphere that alter our weather patterns. Now, for the very first time, I can confirm that weather control by our own secret rulers is also far advanced as it pertains to the United States. On December 12, 1977, an article was planted in a Canadian newspaper which has been circulated very widely throughout the United States. It claimed that an electronic weather barrier had been set up by the Russians to change our weather. The alleged Russian barrier was described as running all the way from Alaska to Chile, and it was blamed for the unusually severe winter that was in progress. Here, my friends, is a perfect example of disinformation. It was designed to mislead the public, and many, many people have been taken in by it. There is a weather modification grid system along our shores, but it's not as described in the article. And it's not Russian. It's controlled by our own secret rulers. This grid system consists of three tremendous underwater cables laid along the continental shelf of our east, west, and Gulf coasts. The West Coast cable runs from Cape Cook on northwest Vancouver Island down the west coast past Baja California to a point opposite Tuxpan, Mexico. The East Coast cable runs from the tip of a peninsula at the northeast end of the Bay of Fundy, Nova Scotia, southward to a point near Jacksonville, Florida. The Gulf cable runs from a point northwest of Tampa, near Buena Vista, Florida, westward to a point 77 miles due east of Corpus Christi, Texas. Each cable is powered by an underground nuclear power plant. These three underground nuclear power plants are located at Cape Cook, at the peninsula I described in Nova Scotia, and near Buena Vista, Florida. You may have read articles speculating that very powerful radio waves might be used to alter the weather, but that's not how the coastal grid system works. Instead, each grid cable can be made either positive or negative relative to the Earth. The nuclear power plant that feeds it acts like a giant battery, with one terminal connected to the cable, the other grounded. These three coastal grids combined set up electrical fields that span the continental United States, excluding Alaska, with parts of Mexico and Canada affected as well. Electric charges in the upper atmosphere move in response to these fields, producing jet stream shifts, which in turn alter our weather. The process absorbs enormous amounts of power, which is provided by the three underground nuclear power plants that feed the grids. In the bitter winter just past, killer storms were created by weather control that was only partly due to Soviet cosmospheres. For the most part, they were caused by the coastal grids, which I'm able to reveal today for the very first time. At the present time, the West Coast grid is negatively charged, while the East Coast grid is positive. But I'm informed that beginning just 6 days ago on May 20, an experiment got underway involving frequent changes in polarity of the Gulf grid. Yesterday, for example, the polarity was changed from negative to positive at 4:20 p.m., and then reversed from positive to negative again barely 7 hours later at 11:30 p.m. In light of all this, ponder the words of Merlin Williams, director of the federal government's Weather Modification Office, in an interview published just yesterday, May 25, in the New York Times. A sense of urgency about improved storm warning was conveyed as he pointed to communities on the southern Florida coast as being particularly vulnerable. He said it is likely that, quote, the kind of storms that killed only a few people in the past will kill thousands. The time is ripe for such a killer storm, and I'm afraid it could very well come this summer or fall, unquote. These grids, my friends, are being used by our secret rulers to manipulate our weather for their own purposes. Last winter, tremendous storms just happened to coincide with efforts of the gas lobby to deregulate natural gas prices. And now, strange weather conditions have seriously delayed the planting of spring crops in our breadbasket areas and have caused crops to be washed away in others. What is going on now is weather warfare involving not only weather modification weapons of the Soviet Union, but also of our own secret rulers. The era of weather strategy has dawned, with America as the battleground. These secret coastal grids tend to produce regional and nationwide weather modification effects, while the Russian cosmospheres produce more concentrated, localized effects. But now, with even more cosmospheres overhead than the 216 I reported to you last month, a battle royal is shaping up for control of America's weather. I cannot say who will win, but what I can say for sure is that strange weather will be widespread this summer, and perhaps even more so next winter. and the losers will be you and me, the American people. This disruption of our food supply by weather modification has already begun, reflected in skyrocketing vegetable prices at your local supermarket. But a much more dramatic disruption in those food supplies that come from our West Coast could occur at any moment. I'm referring to the effects of man-made earthquake and tidal wave disaster I first warned about a year ago in audio letter number 24. In that tape, I gave the locations of 7 Russian fission superbombs that had been planted in deep undersea trenches around the Philippines. As I explained then, the Philippines sit like a keystone in the long arc of geological faults that ring the Pacific, the so-called Ring of Fire. A major earthquake erupting in the Philippines could work its way around the Pacific Rim and ultimately devastate America's west coast. And that's exactly what is planned. Since I made that tape, I've also reported the planting of lower-yield undersea weapons around the Pacific and elsewhere by the Soviet Union. Many of these have been detonated, and during the past year, strong earthquakes have been very frequent along the Pacific Rim, everywhere except the Philippines. What the Soviet Union has been doing, my friends, is to release tensions in the Earth's crust everywhere except around the Philippines, where the stresses are building to tremendous levels. When the time is ripe, according to Russian stress monitoring instruments in that area, the bombs around the Philippines will be set off. Soviet scientists anticipate that earthquakes and tidal waves of unprecedented proportions will be triggered as a result, and that as one result, America's west coast will be laid waste. For further details of the plan, I suggest you listen again to audio letter 24. A few days ago, a volcano in the Philippines began erupting, indicating that the stresses in that area are building up. And in the past few days, the Russians have triggered strong earthquakes in the 6.5 Richter range in quick succession near Taiwan, Japan, and the Aleutians. My friends, the first major disaster in the secret geophysical war now underway lies just around the corner.